With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
SB Nation and Underdog Dynasty present the Underdog Podcast.
And we're back with another episode of the Underdog Dynasty Podcast, AAC edition. My name is Dan Morrison. That is Emily Van Buskirk. How are you doing today, Emily?
I am doing fantastic. How are you doing?
I'm all right. I'm a little bit tired. I'm all right.
I thought we were both going to be on the same page and be like, yeah, rah, rah. It's the last week of regular season, baby.
Yeah, this is the time of year where I'm constantly tired. Though, like, if you, I think you know this because you're also in college sports media. This is a very busy part of the season.
Yeah. Yeah.
Championship races, you've got playoff scenarios, you've just rivalry week. College basketball started up. So if you do any writing about college basketball, you've got all these like early season tournaments going on. If, you know, if you get into silly season with coaching stuff, Lane Kiffin is going to be the end of me with all his scenarios.
Oh, I mean, I don't like Lane Kiffin, but that tweet was pretty funny. Like, I will give him that.
Guy is out there.
He's something else.
Yeah, we don't need to do Lane Kiffin talk on the AAC podcast.
I'm okay with that.
My point is there's so much going on with all that stuff. Like, I'm seeing Matt Rhule go flip-flop back and forth on Nebraska. I'm tired, Emily. But I'm excited because this is our year at the same time for sports things because it is so hectic and there's always something to care about, you know. So,
yeah.
Good and bad with it.
I'm excited because we made it to then, you know. We're going to recap week 12 and then preview week 13. And that's a wrap on the regular season, which is, you know, it's another one in the bank.
That's a wrap on the regular season if you don't count Army-Navy as regular season.
I mean, for the AAC, well, I guess, yeah, Navy is okay. For the rest of the AAC, that's a wrap.
I know what you mean.
I do count Army-Navy, but I always think of it as like a postseason, like extra.
It is. It almost feels more like a bowl game than it does.
Yeah, it kind of is. So
it does.
Yeah.
Anyways, we should go back and recap week 12 in the American.
Let's do it.
Before we move on. And we're going to start with Thursday night's game, which feels like a century ago now to me. Tulane 59, yes. SMU 24, and it really wasn't that close. Oh, boy. this was an ass beating.
Yeah, I don't. Yes.
I thought Tulane was going to win this game. I did not see them destroying SMU. So basically what happened.
I told you. I don't know why nobody listens to me, I have to say it. SMU is not as good as everybody thought they were. They had a couple of good games. They put things together really well. They're obviously smart kids. They're talented. They're athletic. But they're not there yet as a team. And that was apparent when they played TCU. So I don't know if you guys remember that game so long ago. But they cannot compete against teams that are – they cannot well, okay, but TCU I think is overrated too, to be fair. But teams that have a cohesive, complete unit like Tulane and like TCU, they just can't compete. So
yeah, I mean,
that's my two cents.
This game, there's a couple things that are very clear. The first was SMU's defense had no way of stopping anything Tulane did. You just hand it to Spears and he ran for 30 yards. It was just the easiest offense you've ever seen. The other thing was, it was kind of the opposite of what happened to Tulane in the UCF game. Like, and against UCF, Tulane really couldn't stop UCF's running. And so the thing that really beat Tulane against UCF was UCF's ability to run the ball. It wasn't really the passing game, right? But against SMU, well, they don't really run the ball that well. And they tried to throw it and run their little screen passes and over that type of thing. And Tulane secondary was just too good, and they blew it up every time. And, you know, I wasn't impressed with Mordecai at all in this game. He's going pro, by the way. Cleared it officially. This is his last, or I guess last two games, assuming he plays in the bowl.
which we don't know anymore if people are going to do that, which is like a thing. So that's,
I think he probably should. Great. I think he'd do well to put more stuff on tape. He's not Bryce Young, but you know,
yes.
Yeah. Five SMU turnovers. That doesn't help.
Oof.
I don't know what else there's to say other than, I mean, shout out to the tight end for SMU Maryland. He's a young player. He's a very good player.
Mm-hmm. RJ Maryland. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, RJ Maryland. He's basically the only one who showed up for SMU in this game.
Yes.
Yeah. I did see one reporter after the game.
Oh, boy.
The Rhett Lashley question.
Yeah. Are you asking me if I'm embarrassed? Yeah. We are.
Like, are you embarrassed by losing by, what is it?
He didn't use that word, but he was like, he kind of insinuated it, and coach was like, are you asking me if I'm embarrassed that we lost by that? And he's like, yeah, I'm embarrassed.
The daggers that Lashley stared at him. I would have wet myself and never asked a question.
It was uncomfortable watching the video. I was just like, oh my God, he's staring at me. But I'll say one thing about this game, and then we can move on because obviously it's pretty clear cut. Michael Pratt earning Offensive Player of the Week honors for the American. He had six touchdowns in the win, which is a lot for Michael Pratt. Okay. He was 9 of 14 for 141 yards and 3 touchdowns. And he added 70 rushing yards on 10 carries with another 3 touchdowns.
Nice. Yeah.
So he, you know, I don't, he ranked second.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say, you're not the biggest fan of him, but he was very, very efficient in this game.
But here's my rub about it. Yes. His pass efficiency was 157.29. He's only thrown 4 interceptions, the fewest of any starting quarterback in the conference. Yes. He is, I have said this many times, he's a good quarterback. You know, we acknowledge that, we get it. I don't always believe in his decision-making, okay? There were many times that he had players wide open in the end zone. One in particular, he had Will Wallace, the tight end, in the back of the end zone, completely open, and he decides to run headfirst into a guy, nearly injuring himself. For what? Another touchdown on his tally? Like, come on, man.
Well, I mean, the passing touchdowns on his tally, too. We spoke about that when it happened live about how open that throw was. And it was
insane. A bunch of people on Twitter chimed in about it and was like, this is, we all saw that. We all saw it. And so there was a couple of times like that where I'm like, hey, stop putting yourself in, like sometimes, and he makes hits look way worse than they are. I don't know if it's body, the way that sound it makes. I don't know. But he.
Describe him as a thick player.
No, he's almost like if he put on a little more weight, he could be. He's a big head, but every time he hits something, it looks worse than it is. It sounds worse than it is. So I'm just like, don't do it. Don't do that. Just like make the pass, the 10-yard pass to your player, and that's fine. So that was my issue with Tulane. Otherwise, you know, we'll get into their big game with Cincinnati next week with a very special guest in the second half of the podcast joining us from the Tulane roster. So stay tuned for that. But yeah,
it's called
big win for the Green Wave.
It absolutely was. Got back on track. Moving on to Friday night's game. Tulsa 48, mm-hmm. USF 42.
How do we feel about this game?
I think it was entertaining to watch if that's what you care about.
I think Tulsa, it was competitive.
I think Tulsa let USF's third string quarterback score 42 points. I think that's an issue. I think USF's defense is still egregiously bad, and that was made pretty clear by Tulsa scoring 48. Prince had a great game. I mean, USF did the thing where they just have really good athletes, and they got them the ball and allowed them to be really good athletes, and Tulsa doesn't have as – USF is by far the more talented roster if we're getting into it between these two teams, and I think that showed. I also think it showed that there's something – especially on the defensive side of the ball, just dysfunctional about USF still. And that's not going to change this year. There's just no time for it to change. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
I guess if I'm a USF fan, I look at a game like this, and as long as the transfer portal doesn't take half your roster,
yeah. I'd say
I can see where there's a little bit of light if you get a better coach. You know, it's an interim situation. If you're USF, you're just waiting for it to be over.
It was an interesting game. You know, Byron Brown, freshman quarterback, obviously he gets honor roll. He's the only one in this game that got honored and on the honor roll part of the weekly honors. Mm-hmm. For, I mean, 21 of 25 for 240 yards, three touchdowns, and a rushing touchdown. Yeah, that's for his first career start. That's incredible. He completed 21 consecutive passes to start the game. So, okay, you give credit where credit's due to this freshman quarterback coming in on a, you know, riding in on a horse, saving what's little left of this program at this point. And you got to give him props for that. But then you look at Ryan Batty. I mean, he had an incredible game. Fourth straight 100-yard rushing game, posted 1,000-yard rushing for the season. He's only the sixth USF player to do so, by the way. He had a career-high 169 yards and a touchdown on just 19 carries. What does that – is that not equally impressive? As are we just going to give honors to quarterbacks now? Is that what it is?
Pretty much, yeah. Why?
That's very frustrating for me. I'm upset about it. Other than that, you know, we have to see Braylon Braxton play again, which, I mean, he had a lot of yards, and Denaric Prince ran for 219 yards, which was beastly of him, but it's just not the same. It's not the same Tulsa team, you know, no, it's just not.
And I've said it all season. They lost a few pieces on their defense that made that defense mm-hmm. pretty formidable. And they lost the things on the interior of both offensive and defensive lines that gave them their identity. To me, this has been right. a whole year that has had identity issues. For a part of the year, it looks like they might just be like, hey, we're going to lean to more of an air raid kind of attack. But Brent's had some injury issues, and
yeah.
it hasn't worked out that way at the end. And you... more often than not, can't run the ball, or when you do, it's because Prince is going up against a bad defense. You know right. what I mean?
And I think Brent is such a leader too, even though, you know, and just not having him there is hard. Yeah. So I think there's a lot of hope for USF, because really, where else can you go? But Tulsa, I think they might have to take a look in the mirror, right?
I think the thing with Tulsa is it's such a hard job. You have to go. You have to balance Philip Montgomery's entire time. He's made an AAC championship game. He's had a couple of good seasons, but when it's bad there, it's super bad under him.
Yeah.
It's more often bad than it is good, is my problem with Tulsa.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Moving on.
Yeah, Navy 17, UCF 14. I was at this game, and let me tell you what, I am so happy Gus Malzahn never has to coach against Navy again. He has no idea what he's looking at.
Yeah. Yeah. That was tough.
In the first half, I thought he was okay. So, first off, I want to give Navy credit, especially on the defensive side of the ball.
Yes.
Since the second half of the Notre Dame game through this entire game, they have been on an absolute heater defensively. Brian Newberry, their defense coordinator, and his bag of tricks for disguising pass rush absolutely confused the crap out of Notre Dame in the second half of that game. Notre Dame had, I think it was 12 yards of offense in the second half of that game. UCF pretty much equally confused the whole game, other than every now and again. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Lots and lots of pressure. Full credit there. Do I give Navy's offense any credit? A little bit, I guess. 17 isn't much. They ran three plays all game. It was triple option left, triple option right, quarterback sneak, wingback sweep. That's the only things they ran all game. They tried to throw a couple times and took
sacks. If it works.
Zero passing yards on the day. That's not a first.
Yeah. Navy.
They do that. No, I mean, credit to Navy, because they were able to really drain the clock very.
If you do something well and you can do it well for that long, then it doesn't matter if people know. Uh-oh. The thing about Navy is if you do something well and you could do it well for an entire game, it doesn't matter if it's basic or, you know, standard or people know it's coming. It doesn't matter. If you do it well, you do it well, and you could do it against anybody. So they came in, they executed the game plan that they're good at. They ran the clock like a freaking beast, and they weren't penalized, because they're the least penalized team in the nation. They're very disciplined. They're a well-oiled machine when it's going right, you know? And mm-hmm. so that's what they have going for them. John Marshall, senior linebacker for Navy, earned defensive player of the week honors in the AAC. He plays the striker position, set a school record for four sacks to go with his 10 tackles and a forced fumble that set up the game-winning field goal in the win. He all of his four sacks came in the second half as the midshipmen held the Knights scoreless on their final five possessions. Marshall leads the American with a school record 10 and a half sacks in 2022. So defensively, they were anchored by that. Offensively, we've got another honor roll mention for a Navy player, sophomore fullback
Fofana.
Dava Fofana.
Yeah.
Rushed for 114 yards on 20 carries and set up the midshipman's first touchdown with a 46-yard run. So I would say it's a pretty complete game for Navy.
Yeah, it's exactly how Navy wants to win games on the UCF side of it. They benched John Rhys Plumlee coming out of halftime after the game. Gus said that Plumlee was having a shoulder issue. I don't buy that for a second. I think Gus benched him because he was having a bad first half and he went to Mikey Keene and Keene played like shit, but he couldn't go back in game. You know what I mean? It's too much flip-flopping at a certain point.
Yeah.
And the
you make a choice like that, you got to stick with it, unfortunately.
And the shoulder issue is his excuse to go back to Plumlee for the USF game. Because Mikey Keene had the initial drive out of half where they scored super quickly, and then he sucked. He sucked. I mean, I was at this game. There's UCF fans like in the first half screaming, "We need Keene, Keene!" About halfway through the third
quarter. What did they say when he went in?
The huge cheers when he came in about halfway through the third quarter. The same people are going, "We should put Plumlee back in. This is bad."
Okay, my question is, did UCF fans stay the whole game?
Yeah, UCF up until about a minute left in the game when Navy was just running.
When they were, okay.
When UCF ran out of timeouts, that's basically when people left. Okay. One student section cleared out. There's two student sections at UCF for people who don't know on either side of the end zone. One was back the whole game. One was three quarters full and by the end was half full.
I was curious how the 11 a.m. kick affected attendance.
Good crowd for 11 a.m. Okay. Good crowd.
That's
for
good.
I'd say 35 to 40,000 people.
Nice. Okay. I wasn't sure if that was going to be an issue. So
wasn't sold out, but it was a good crowd.
Obviously, UCF still in this, despite this loss, still in the championship race, depending on what happens next week. And we'll get into that more in the second half. But they're not down and out yet, Dan, but they are. It's not a good look to lose to a team that's won three games.
I just better not see any more UCF fans claiming we need more Mikey Keene, because there was times in this game where he had lanes to run for 20 yards and he threw the ball out of bounds instead.
You get a chance like that to show.
All those sacks that Marshall had, they're all in the second half because Mikey Keene couldn't get away from him. Plumlee could have gone away from most of those sacks. Oh, that's just a fact. He's more athletic. Well, and you know what? I also say this. Why did Plumlee play bad in the first half? It was on Gus. The play calling was atrocious. Two runs from Plumlee to 18 passes in the first half. That's not his game. I know that Plumlee's a limited passer, but he's a great runner. So if you're not running him, you're having him throw the ball all over the field. Of course, he's not going to play as well as you want him to.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It was like the opposite of the two-lane game plan, and that stuck.
That's interesting, and I'm very curious to know.
I think
going from that big, I don't know.
My theory based on the game was that Gus wanted to, like, he was scared about how few possessions they would have, and he was pressing too soon with the play calling.
Yeah.
That's my theory.
You can't go in scared of Navy. I mean, they are what they are, but man.
But
you gotta hit them in the mouth. You gotta come out and hit them.
The Navy's first drive was like a 7.5 minute touchdown drive. And I think he was like, oh, how many possessions are we gonna get? We have to go quick. And I think it backfired. UCF did not run the ball enough. Anyways, moving on. This next one I'm gonna talk about: Houston 42, ECU 3.
I can't. I didn't watch the game to be honest with you. I'm upset. I saw the score. I obviously went back and watched, highlights and parts of it to try and understand what it was.
It was a little bit of, first off, ECU's defense absolutely abandoned it in the passing.
Yeah.
Just big play after big play. And it's not like Houston was running the ball well. It really was just the passing attack just giving up big plays.
Yeah.
And then the offense couldn't get anything going where it was just like a little mistake stall to drive. Guy drops a pass. There's a bunch of drops in this game.
Yeah.
A couple guys who probably could have had touchdowns that they dropped for ECU. Aylers maybe.
But Clayton Toon looked like Clayton Toon of old,
Yeah. He was a vintage, exactly what you want. I think he led Houston in rushing too, which wasn't saying a ton in this game, but it was like a very, it felt like a slow blowout where you're like, okay, well, ECU did a little thing wrong there. Now it's Houston's ball. Oh, there's a big play. And all of a sudden, it's like the end of the first half, and it's like 21-0. You're like, okay, this might be like tough to come back. And then very quickly in the third quarter, oh, this game's out of reach. But like it never necessarily felt like, I don't know. It was just so weird to see this coming into the game too. Because Houston was having so much trouble on defense to turn around and do this against a pretty good offense. Very surprising.
It's pretty frustrating, especially being at home for ECU, right? Like you hate to see a game like that happen to them at home.
This was senior day. This was your boy Holton Iller's senior day.
Okay. He didn't have a game. It happens, you know, but I just don't understand.
It was so weird because ECU had zero penalties and zero turnovers. Like they didn't notably, there was like not one thing you could point out that they were clearly doing wrong other than little things stalling out drives and the defense not, the defense didn't play well, but you know what I mean?
Well, hats off to Houston for finally looking like the team they were supposed to be all season long. And we love that for them. They're still alive.
They're the fourth team in the race for the conference championship. For starters, they need UCF to lose to USF. So it's probably not happening, but weirder things have happened.
Yes. Yeah, so, and then we have one mention for Houston on the honor roll. Nathaniel Dell, senior wide receiver, we all know and love. 9 catches for 176 yards and a touchdown. Average 19.6 yards per reception. So...
yeah.
And then Houston, weirdly, 10-2 in its last 12 road games. What is that? They just play better on the road? What?
There's better energy on the road. There's actually people in the stands.
Oof. Okay. That makes sense. I'll accept that answer then. There we go.
I will say the ESPN crew who did the game had a really great shot catching Danis like walking back and forth, pacing the sidelines with a Red Bull in his hand.
No way.
Yeah. Yeah. They're just pounding a Red Bull.
Yikes. He's going to, oh my God. Okay. Anyways, do we even have to talk about the next one or?
Memphis 59, North Alabama 0. Hey, Memphis, you're bowl eligible. Congratulations.
They needed it. I did not think they would shut out anybody, sure. But.
I mean.
There you go.
Sure. It's North Alabama. Sure.
What else? I think we have one.
Who played well or not in this game?
Well, we've got one honorable mention: Eddie Lewis, senior wide receiver, 155 all-purpose yards with 2 touchdowns, 1 receiving, 1 punt return in the win. And then there were a couple of notes which I thought were kind of interesting about Memphis because we've obviously been a little tough on Memphis. They always put this one note in here. Memphis quarterback Seth Hennigan has thrown at least 1 touchdown pass in all 22 games of his collegiate career. And I'm like, oh, okay.
That's like such a random thing, 1 touchdown pass. I mean,
it's very weird.
Shout out to
I got to give a shout out to their punter, Joe Doyle, 2nd nationally in punting average. What?
He punted in this game?
No, I don't think he punted in this game, but he's...
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
But he is recognized nationally. Sorry, one second. He's recognized nationally, 46.9 yards. And it's funny because he's right. I think he's ahead of Cincinnati punter, who actually Mason Fletcher is very good as well. But he's 2nd nationally, which I think that's a weird Memphis stat for you that you would just never know. You know,
Memphis actually has a pretty good history of really good special teams, like kickers and stuff. Like Steven Gostkowski went there for one. Patriots kicker.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
They have a history of some really good kickers. So, I mean, it's not the same special teams coordinator the entire time for the last 2 decades, but they do have a history of it. So, yeah, not nothing. Not for nothing. One more game from week 12 to finish up before we move on.
Yes.
It's Cincinnati 23, Temple 3. Temple's offense finally hit a legit defense after a couple weeks feeling alive.
Yes. Hey, can you stop it for a quick second?
Yeah.
My fire alarm's going.
So, yeah, I mean, it was a nice couple of weeks for Temple's offense feeling like good about itself, but Cincinnati still really is way ahead of where they are. Then that's fine. Cincinnati's offense still, for me, is the same old, nothing new with the problems I see from them. There is no running game. The weapons aren't the same as they were last year. And you've got, I still think you've got issues at quarterback. In fact, I know because Ben Bryant left the game with a foot injury and was replaced by Evan Prater in this game. So now you've got a potential injury for your biggest game of the season next week.
Yeah.
I mean, I haven't seen the status update other than.
The only thing I have to say about the Cincinnati Temple game is obviously I'm sad. I'm sad for Temple. I want them, would like to see them do a little better. So that sucks, but it's understandable because Cincinnati is a good team. And big shout out to the special teams player of the week, Ryan Coe, senior kicker for Cincinnati, scored 11 points, going 3 for 3 on field goal attempts, 2 PATs in the win, keeping the Bearcats tied for first place in the conference standings. We're going to get into that later. He was good from 28, 38, and 24 yards. Not super impressive, honestly, but steady, so that's good. Extending his streak to 9 straight successful field goal attempts and becoming the most accurate kicker in program history at 81.8%. He's hit 18 of 22 field goals this season, ranking 2nd in the American in made field goals. All from a guy who transferred in from a school that people didn't really know about.
Yeah.
It's pretty impressive.
Yeah, really
good. We love that.
And it was a good, really good pickup for Cincy, who that was a thing they needed to fix after last year. That was bad.
Yes. This is how you utilize the transfer portal correctly when it comes to special teams. Now, granted, I don't know how many kickers or punters go in the portal, but
yeah, it's I mean, enough do.
Yeah,
I mean, it's, we'll see.
Hats off to Cincinnati for not having eyes ahead. You know, they at least came in the game, played, did what they needed to do, and not, you know, so
yeah, at least the defense did. The offense just don't think it's very good, isn't the thing.
I mean, yeah, I agree. So
it is what it is.
Well, that's week 12 in the AAC.
Yeah. And I think at this point, it'd be a good point to point out that the AAC is going
to
get
a good point to point out.
That's, yeah, it's a good sentence. the AAC is going to get the New Year's Six Bowl berth.
The
AAP poll, you'd be like, oh man, there's like the Sun Belt's really creeping in there. Like they have a good chance. No, that's not what you look at. College football playoff rankings. It's Tulane 19, UCF 22, somehow with 3 losses. And Cincinnati 24. As long as it's one of those 3 that wins the conference championship, which I'm going to say 99% certainty that it will be, because Houston's the only other one who's got a very long shot at making it, they should be going to the college football playoff.
You want to stop it? Yeah. Hi. All right. We are starting the second half of the podcast where we're going to preview the week 13 games. But before we do that, we are being joined now by a very special guest. We don't get the honor of too many guests because Dan and I have too much talking to do, but every time we do have guests, they tend to be Tulane related, which is kind of nice because, as you know, we've had Corey Dublin on the show before back when he was in his senior year, but now we're joined by senior linebacker Nick Anderson. Welcome to the Underdog Dynasty podcast.
Most definitely. Thank you for having me.
Of course. We're so excited for this week in the AAC because there's so many things that could happen. And we're not going to talk about playoff scenarios with you or championship scenarios with you. But I wanted to give our fans a little bit of insight into your football journey specifically and how you kind of found your way to Tulane and how that's been going for you.
Most definitely. Well, for starters, Tulane first came across my radar maybe my junior year of high school. My coach had mentioned that it was a great academic school, and academics has always been something high on my priority list. And he mentioned it, and at the time, we had a coach come by the school, but my head coach at the time was let go at the time going into my senior year, so I really lost that contact. And then going through my senior year, I just was a little under recruited, being from a small town like Vicksburg, Mississippi. Towards graduation and the end of my senior season, I had, you know, a couple FCS offers, a couple SWAC offers, but I just had a dream of playing big time Division I football, so I figured I'd take the junior college route, take a gamble on myself and my own talent, in which I did, and I really enjoyed my time at junior college. Wouldn't trade it for anything in the world. Had a great 6 months there and got a couple offers from different schools, an offer from Ole Miss, South Alabama, ULL, and then Tulane came. And you know, it really came down to Ole Miss and Tulane. I felt Tulane gave me a great opportunity to come in and just be a part of a family atmosphere, a part of a great program. I felt like, you know, at the time there was a program that was on the rise. I felt I would definitely be more prioritized at Tulane. So, you know, me and my mom came on a visit and just fell in love with the coaching staff, just Coach Moose and how genuine he is, the way Coach Frizz really loves to run that program, and the type of guys they were at the time. They really held true to that. You know, you can just tell that they were great, genuine guys. They weren't guys that were just selling you dreams. You can tell by the players' interaction with them that everything in the program was true and a good family atmosphere, and that's something I wanted to be a part of. So, yeah, that's how I ended up going junior college and coming down here.
That's awesome. Everyone that I talk to about Tulane just falls in love with the school, you know, not just the athletics, but the academics, the campus, like the people that are there. And it's very evident when you go to Yulman that it's just an incredible and, you know, group of people and school. So that's cool to hear you say that. But you've obviously, the program has been through quite a bit, maybe not as much defensively, but offensively, you've been through a couple coordinators. You guys have had some transition. What do you think has made this season so successful? Do you think you guys finally just gelled together, or what has been different to get you guys where you are this year?
I feel like the reason that we have had such a successful season is truly a testament to all the bad things that has happened. And then, you know, we just went through a lot last year, and I feel like mm-hmm. they brought everybody together. When you look at everything that we went through last year, from the hurricane through losses, through different people inside the team dealing with losses of family members and things like that, it just was a lot of things that, you know, gave us every reason to break apart, but we didn't. You know, we only lost maybe two people to the transfer portal, but to have 98% of the team come back after a 2-10 season really just showed the culture that we have here, the family atmosphere that we have here. And that's really just what has shown true this year. Just the reason that we sitting here right now with 9 wins and only 2 losses and really on the verge of flipping the script from last year is just because of the brotherhood, because of the family atmosphere, because of the culture that we have down here at Tulane. So when everybody asks, I feel like that's just the only answer that's really the truth. It's just the culture that we have. We just decided to come together, and all the puzzle pieces just fit perfect for this season.
I like that.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I'm wondering, in that same vein, kind of, this is, if I'm not mistaken, Tulane's best season record-wise since 98 when Greenway went undefeated.
You're not mistaken. I feel like everybody in the world has been talking about that. Like, okay, well, that is the story. I love you, Dan. Nope, I love you. You're good.
I
have to give you shit.
Okay, I'm not guessing. But no, I was just going to say, is there a point in the season where you knew that you had that potential for that type of season? Because I'm sure you came in the year knowing, we know that we can be a bowl team. We know that we can, we know that we were better than we were last year in terms of record, at least. Was there a point we said, oh no, this can be a very special season, not just a good season?
I really feel like that came after the Houston game. You know, Houston had been a team that, you know, was projected to win the conference. They're a very, very talented group, a very well-coached outlet. And to see how we battle back, you know, after dealing with the hype of going up to Kansas State and winning and then coming home and losing the next week, to see us transition and go on the road and secure overtime win really just showed us, you know, the level that we were at and the road ahead of, you know, us really staying together and us really focusing on what we can control, not getting too far ahead and having that 1-0 mentality. You know, the sky's the limit for our season, and that's really what has been tried and true. So I really say the change of point in the season was definitely the Houston game.
Awesome.
I got that. I mean, that's crazy because we all thought Houston was going to be the team too. And that has been, they were your pick, but you know, that's the AAC, baby. That's showbiz. That's just what happens.
Conference championship scenarios, but they are still technically alive. But
yes, we're not going to do that, but yes. I have to ask you a couple questions about the AAC because people sleep on Group of Five football, right? Like, it's crazy. It's Power Five. Like, no one gives we're getting more love this year, I will say, than ever. You know, Coastal Carolina helped. Y'all have helped. It's been better. But people sleep on it, but it's great, good football and good environment. So my question to you would be, I have a few. The first one is, where is your favorite place to play outside of Yulman in the AAC?
The Bounce House.
Oh, the Bounce House, Dan. Oh my God. That is my least favorite place to go to a game because the press box there sways, it moves, and it's so scary. Like, no.
It's also incredibly hot there, but it's, I think,
yeah, it's hot. Well, he's from Mississippi, so you're probably used to the heat.
Yeah, I definitely know. But the bounce house is just always, you know, you're always going to get a great atmosphere. When you go down there, you're going to have great fans. The Florida weather. So, you know, I say the bounce house is at the top of my
list. Are the fans nice or are they mean?
It depends on where you are. Because, you know, coming out of the student section, you might, you know, get called a couple of names. But towards our sideline, you know, they're pretty nice.
Okay, well, that's good. Okay, so then that's your favorite. Where is the hardest place in the AAC to play? It's weather or fans or whatever.
It has to be. I haven't been to Cincinnati yet. My first time in Newport Stadium. But aside from that, I would say Memphis. Memphis, they are having a great season. It's definitely a tough place to play because their fans are literally right behind you and they definitely giving you an earful. When we went up there to 2019 when they had their conference championship season, that was just a very, very crazy atmosphere. So I say Memphis, when they're, you know, doing very well in their program, that's a hard place to go.
That's what I've heard. I've wanted to go to Liberty. I've never been there, so that's on my list. Okay, craziest opposing coach you've seen on the sideline. And I don't know if this is like a thing that players recognize, but for example, we were just talking about Dana Holgorsen, you know, running up and down the sideline with a Red Bull in his hand, just like, cause he's a little bit crazy. So I ever wonder, like, if you're on your sideline or even on the field and you ever see their coach being crazy, if there's one that stands out to you.
On television wise, I've seen SMU's coach this year. I think he's a first year guy. He has definitely
Rhett Lashley. Yep.
Coaches that, definitely give the referees an earful. So it's been funny kind of watching him, on TV, the things that, you know, the way he just acts with the coaches when he gets upset. Dana is definitely a sight to see in person. I remember us playing them, just the way he was acting was kind of funny. But both are two great coaches, but, you know, those would be my top two of, you know, just funny guys to watch on the sidelines.
I can see that.
Yeah. Are you nervous about the cold going up to Nippert in November?
Honestly, not really, simply because, you know, these past two games we've had down in New Orleans has really prepped us.
Yeah. Yes.
The cold front down here came from nowhere. So I feel like we're going to be very well prepared going up there and playing in the cold.
It was freezing at the UCF game, and Kim and I were not prepared because it was supposed to be sunny. I was in a skirt. It was so cold. So I'm not worried about them going to Cincinnati. It was cold.
Right. And then last Thursday, it was like 40.
That's when I came too, so you lost the sun.
Ugh, it's cold. Okay, I have to ask you, you've had some incredible plays over the course of your career at Tulane. I mean, in general, but at Tulane specifically. This year, we got to see, now, I don't know if I've ever told you this, but I'm a huge fullbacks fan. This is my favorite position. I know you've played some fullbacks. That's why I'm going to bring this up. But you probably know what I'm going to say. The fake punt against Tulsa, absolutely just chef's kiss, beautiful. So excited you got to execute that. Does that rank up in there of like your top plays that you've had happen at Tulane?
I would say that it may not be a top play, but it's definitely a top moment. Being a linebacker and being on the defense side of the ball, you know, it's definitely a blessing to say that I have carried the ball in a collegiate football game. And it was on a fake punt, which is even more fun. So it's definitely one of the top moments that I'll be able to say in my football career. I was able to run the ball and pick up a first down in a collegiate football game.
Epic. Dan, do you want to ask some questions about this week?
Yeah, because you've got, obviously, I don't know if you'd say it's your biggest game of the year, but I'd say it's probably the biggest game of the year. I mean, what is, I guess, the first thing, what's your number one concern with Cincinnati's offense?
Just overall, I feel like those guys are a very disciplined offense. You know, we're going to definitely have to play disciplined football on defense because, you know, Cincinnati has been to the past, I think, four conference championships. They've had a great offense each and every year, which comes down to them, those guys up there playing disciplined football. So I feel like the biggest challenge is definitely going to be matching their discipline, limiting penalties. Last week we got a couple of PIs, got penalties on defense, and then against Central Florida we had about six PIs on defensively. So just, you know, going out there and playing fundamentally sound football is definitely going to be our edge. They have a talented offensive line group, a veteran offensive line group. So definitely trying to get to the passer, whether, you know, they start Ben Bryan or, you know, they start the backup. You know, we don't know who's going to start, but being able to affect the passer. And then also they have two speedy wideouts that do a great job of making great catches down the field. So just playing great back end pass defense, which we have all season, and just executing our style of football, I feel we're going to be okay.
How would you, let me ask two questions actually. How would you describe your defensive style of football if you had to use like a word or a phrase? Like, what is the Tulane defensive style?
I would say smart and physical.
Okay.
We run different concepts defensively, but we're able to get in different looks and do different schemes. Coach Hampson does a great job of, you know, coming up with different game plans for the opponent week in, week out. And we do a great job of executing it, but also we're a very physical team. You know, we're not the biggest group, especially when you just look at us, but we play with a chip on our shoulder. We play with a lot of physicality. And I feel like that's what sets us apart from other defenses, just being able to execute the game plan that our coaches give us and being able to execute very physical.
I like that. Okay. Who is the hardest quarterback to get to that you've played in your career at Tulane? I know it's a tough one.
It was, y'all probably remember, it was 2019, Navy's quarterback 2019.
Yeah.
He ended up getting drafted to the Dolphins.
Yeah, Malcolm Perry.
Malcolm Perry, that's right.
Malcolm Perry was a crazy
athlete.
Yeah. The triple was fun.
I mean, yeah, the triple option stuff, but that's impressive that he called out Malcolm Perry. I respect that. Okay. Yeah. Not who I thought you were gonna say, so I'm like, wow. Anyways, back to Cincinnati. Sorry.
Well, as you say, you mentioned Coach Hampton. What's your relationship like with him? Is it more he's the defensive coordinator and I'm more with my position coach, or is it a good back and forth with him?
And Coach Hampton, he's like a father figure to me. Me and him are very close. We have a great relationship. We call each other all the time, not to just talk about football, but to just talk about life, just to joke around sometimes. Sometimes we send each other memes and stuff. So, like, he's definitely, you know, one of my close mentors and definitely somebody that I consider family outside of football.
Nice. Absolutely. Probably going to be a head coach someday.
Most definitely. Oh. He deserves to be.
I think so too.
Do you think, I have a Cincinnati question. Sorry, Dan. Do you think Willie Fritz is going to dial up some? So I know you guys practice all kind of scenarios for these kinds of games because you really never know what's going to come out. Like, do you need the fake punt? Are you going to need a fake field goal? I don't know. Who really knows? But you practice them all. Do you think Coach Fritz, who's been known to dial up some plays in the ends of games that are close, do you think he's going to bring it and be ready for this?
I definitely feel like Coach Fritz is always prepared to do something to win the game. He's a great decision maker. You know, he doesn't really, you know, sweat in those times. You know, you saw the quarterback sneak to go for it for us to seal the win against Kansas State. And he just makes great decisions when we need him. So I definitely feel like he definitely, you know, has a game plan ready for Cincinnati. And I'm excited to see it myself.
Me too.
Nice. Then what do you think when you're going up against, I guess, anyone, but I'll say Cincinnati because that's who you're playing this week. What's more important if you want to get to the quarterback, whoever that might be this week? Is it the pass rush or is it your secondary holding on and giving you time?
I feel like with our defense, the style of defense we play, we do more of a drop eight defense. So, you know, it's really good to get, you know, get rushed with three, in which we were able to do last week against SMU, you know. But I feel like that's a testament to the coverage, a testament to our back end. I don't feel like our back end, as far as the corners and the safeties, get enough recognition as the job that they do of getting in the way of those passing lanes, helping the quarterback have to second guess himself and giving the guys up front an opportunity to get to him. So it's definitely going to come down to, you know, our corners and our safeties doing a great job on the back end, which is definitely going to affect the passer to where he has to second guess himself and leads to sacks.
I have another question. Does Will Wallace have the best hair on the team?
I think he does.
That's a good answer. The only answer, really. Great. You got one more football question in you, Dan, or no?
Yeah, well, you kind of mentioned it already, but I was going to ask you if you guys have some, if you know which quarterback you're preparing for this week at all. It sounds like you're not 100% sure who you're going to see, though.
Yeah, we're not 100%. I mean, Ben Bryant got injured last week, but the backup, he definitely plays, has played in really every game. You know, they have a game plan for when he comes into the game. And we've just been preparing for both. Hopefully nobody gets hurt and we don't have to see a third string quarterback because we don't know too much about that. But we've definitely been preparing for both quarterbacks and we'll be ready for whichever one we see.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Nick, for taking this time. And we wish you the best of luck against Cincinnati this week. We're all going to be watching because the fate of the conference depends on this game. So everyone will be tuned in. It's a perfect storm for crazy football. So we're all going to be watching. But thank you for coming on. And we look forward to seeing the rest of the season.
No problem. Thank you all for having me.
Thanks.
Yeah, thanks.
All right. That was Tulane linebacker Nick Anderson. He's incredible. Make sure you guys go follow him on social media. I'll throw his handle up on Twitter, but he's an incredible human being. And he gave us some really good insight into this Cincinnati game on Friday. But Dan, what do you think is going to happen here?
Well, I think Tulane's going to win. I do. I mean, here's why. And it comes down to Tulane's defense versus Cincy's offense for me. First off, you've got questions at quarterback for Cincy, which we touched on there.
Mm-hmm.
And this is my opinion, not Nick Anderson's, but mine. Is that it doesn't really matter because if Ben Bryant plays, he stinks. That stinks. Mm. That's rude, but he's not good enough.
He's not ready, we'll just say.
Oh, he's got to be ready. He's like a fifth-year senior.
I thought it was interesting how he was like, hopefully there's not a third-string quarterback because you never know,
I suppose if the third-string quarterback turns out to be a John Rex Plumlee type who wants to run, you don't
I mean, that's the thing, and you don't have film on him, so how are you ever going to know? It just is like, if I'm a third-string quarterback somewhere, I am waiting for that moment where I get to go into a big game, no one knows what I can do, and I just go crazy.
Last week. USF Tulsa last week.
Same kind of thing.
It's an example right there for us.
That's what I want for my life. So,
okay. Anyway, so I think more of my point though is since he's not going to be able to most of their offense is throwing the ball, I don't think it's been very good this year, anyways. That's where Tulane's strength is as a defense. Since he's really struggled to run the ball, I don't think they're going to find it randomly. So I just think it's a really good matchup for Tulane's defense to keep it super, to keep Cincy super low scoring. I mean, and you do flip that and you reverse it since he still has a great defense, but I think there's a little bit more room for the weapons that the Green Wave have, like a Tyjae Spears, to get enough. I think it's going to be a very low-scoring win for Tulane.
Interesting. I want to pick Tulane because that's who I want to win this game because I want them to host the conference championship. I think it would be an incredible ending to an incredible season, but I feel like if I pick them, then they won't win. So what do I do here?
Okay, so you're trying to not jinx.
Yeah. But then what if I jinx them by not picking them?
Well, that's a risk you're going to have to take.
Okay. So I want this to... Okay, first of all, we have Cincinnati's favored by 1 point the last time I checked, which great. That's not even the 3-point like home. That's just 1 point. Like, why?
That means that at a neutral site, they'd be a slight underdog. By like 1 point.
I think Tulane is going to win this game. I really do. Given speaking with the guys last week after the UCF game, like how upset they are and how ready they were for this and how good that they looked in this last game, even though,
they were taking out some demons on SMU.
So I think Tulane's going to win, but I'm going to pick Cincinnati.
Oh, you're picking Cincinnati.
So I don't jinx Tulane. I'm going to pick Cincinnati. And I want them to know that I'm sacrificing my record here for them. So
that's cheating. First,
how is that cheating?
You're trying to cheat the jinx.
It's called strategy.
Okay.
It's called strategy.
Okay.
Everybody's got to do their part. Okay.
Okay.
Let's get into the Saturday games real quick.
ECU at Temple. my simple question for this game is, which ECU team shows up? Is it a team that can dominate a game on really both sides of the ball, but more so offensively? Or is it a team that's kind of like, frankly, was sleepwalking last week? You know what I mean? Is it a bowl eligible ECU team that's excited about what's going on in the future? Or is it a team that's like, well, here we are. It's Temple to end the season. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah. What's
their attitude like in this game? And Temple, same thing, kind of. You know, season's over for Temple other than this game. What is the – how motivated is each team is my question, I guess, with relatively nothing to play for. ECU's going to bowl. Temple can't make one. How badly do you want to be there?
Yeah, I think ECU is favored by 10.5. I think a 6-5 ECU is going to beat a 3-8 Temple by at least 2 scores. I think they're going to exercise some of their own demons from last game. So I'm picking ECU in this game, and I don't think it's going to be close.
All right. I tend to agree with you. I'm definitely going with ECU. I don't know that it's going to be a blowout because I do like some of the development we've seen from Temple. Especially on the defensive side of the ball, but yeah, should be the Pirates relatively easily. An interesting one, I think, Memphis at SMU.
And this is actually the most, besides Tulane Cincy, which obviously like the fate of the conference, whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
This Memphis SMU game, I think, is the most interesting game.
I agree.
Because like, what's going to happen?
Yeah, well, I think if
neither team has a very good defense.
I think if SMU wins, first off, Ryan Silverfield gets fired. That's a belief I have. Not based on any like sourcing or anything like that. That's just a belief I have that he's under a lot of pressure to win this game. SMU, I'm kind of wondering how many players are really all there at this point. After that, the way they just didn't show up to Tulane soured me on a team I've been very high on all season. I've been so much higher on SMU than you have. You know what I mean? I've thought that this team, and I still believe this team can be incredibly explosive on offense. Clearly.
I think SMU is a better team than Memphis, so I'm going to pick SMU to win. But I don't think this is, like, I think it's going to be an interesting game. I don't think it's going to be a particularly good game, especially if you like defense. But if you like a lot of points, then...
Can I tell you something I believe to be true, though I don't know to be true? I believe SMU is going to have a ton of portal activity this offseason. I think you're going to see a large chunk of the team leave in the portal, and I think you're going to see Rhett Lashley bring in a large chunk of next year's team from the portal. This is a thing we're going to see happening a lot with head coaches, where they're not just going to bring in guys their first year, but there's going to be a round of guys who stuck around and said, maybe I'll be with this guy, maybe, and just go, maybe not. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I think that there's going to be a round of that with SMU. And I think there's probably a few guys who already know they're going to put their name in and don't 100% care.
Yeah.
Other than like putting good film on for themselves personally.
Well, this would be huge for Ryan Silverfield. If he could win this game, that would be huge. Rhett Lashley, I'm not as worried about because this is their first year. You know, it's like whatever.
I agree exactly. Yeah. And I think Memphis wins. I think
Okay.
I think Silverfield saves his job with a win.
Interesting. He would save his job with a win, but I don't think that's going to happen, but we'll see.
I still think that he'll be on the hot seat going into next year either.
He should be. Agreed.
Yeah.
All right.
Moving on. War on I-4 UCF at USF. It's the last time this game is going to be played for the foreseeable future.
So sad.
It is. UCF's moving to the Big 12. USF is obviously staying behind. And they both have their out-of-conference filled for the next few years because that's how college football scheduling works, is you fill up your schedule 5, 6, 7 years out. So without paying a lot of money to break contracts, they just have to wait to play it again. I'm sure they will once they get it scheduled as an out-of-conference game, but it's sad. It is. You know, UCF has dominated this game in recent memory. They're by far the better team. They have something to play for. USF really only has spoiler to play for, which is a big thing to play for in a rivalry game.
This is one of those games where it's like, do I think USF is going to win? No. But because it's a rivalry game, could they win? Yeah, maybe. Like, it doesn't make any logical sense, but rivalries do not make logical sense.
You know, UCF's a 20-point favorite.
I saw 19.5, but yeah.
That's 20. That's rounding up to 20.
I mean, but you're going to sit here and tell me with 100% certainty that nothing weird will happen?
No, because I watched last year's game.
Yeah. I just watched Cal Stanford, and Stanford lost the game. Like, you know what I mean? They shouldn't be losing.
David Shaw at the end of that game, down by 10, kicking a 61-yard field goal as time expired. Yeah. The funniest thing of the season.
Just why? Just why? But I'm saying, like, they have no business losing that game, but they did.
I mean,
rivalry games are different. So,
I mean, Stanford.
I know it's not the same situation because Stanford.
I want to talk a little bit about coaches in this conference once we're done with these previews. Maybe we'll talk about Dave Jatu just for your sake.
I want to finish this one. So I'm going to pick UCF, but I expect complete chaos. So,
okay. I think UCF has it done by halftime. Oof. I think UCF lacked focus last week. I think they know what's on the line in this game, and I think they're the bigger, faster, stronger team.
I mean, they definitely are bigger. I don't know about faster. USF has some track meets.
UCF does too.
Yeah.
We're getting into it. UCF's like entire wide receiving core is just
Instead of the football game, they should just have a 100-yard dash between their two fastest guys.
But, I mean, UCF literally has like a bunch of SEC wide receivers. It's incredible how much more talented they are than some of the teams in this conference.
And yet
they've got two conference losses.
The problem is that they shoot themselves in the foot a lot. So that's the thing, is if they start incurring penalties and doing stupid things, then they can easily lose a game. So they need to be more disciplined.
Yeah, that's true. You're right. They do need to be a little bit more disciplined. I just don't think they can lose this game.
Okay. Well,
really quickly, we'll see. I don't think that this next game is going to warrant a ton of discussion from us. Tulsa at Houston.
4-7 Tulsa at 7-4 Houston. Houston favored by 12.
Houston has an explosive offense on its worst day.
They're playing like the team they should be playing. The question that everyone's asking is, if they blow out Tulsa, let's say someone said 77-0, which
ridiculous, but
unlikely, but let's say, then do they warrant, and everything else happens the way they need it, do they warrant some sort of consideration for championship?
I forget the exact dynamic that they need. The first thing is they need UCF to lose, and then I forget the result.
A lot of it hinges on UCF losing, to be honest. Yeah,
they cannot get in if UCF doesn't lose, and then I forget the result they need in Tulane, Cincinnati.
I think they need
Cincinnati to win because
because
they lost to Tulane, which means, and they haven't played Cincinnati. So
yeah, they need Cincinnati to win. Yes,
they need tiebreakers to go their way.
That's crazy. I don't think it's going to be a problem. I don't think they're going to beat them 77-0, but I do think it'll be at least a 2-3 score game because Houston's offense figured it out, right? Defensively, not great. I think Denaric Prince runs up some yards on them. I don't know in the air that'll be that great, but
pretty good rushing defense last week against ECU.
ECU also played like absolute garbage. So
ECU was sleepwalking, but I'm just saying.
We'll see.
No, I mean, Tulsa's defense is atrocious. Houston's going to get theirs on offense. Would I be surprised if Tulsa gets a few, you know, to make it a little bit of a track meet for a while? No, but I think Houston wins relatively safely. What do you think?
Yeah, I am going to also pick Houston. So
yeah, Houston's got something to play for. Tulsa doesn't. I think that matters in these games. Also,
yes, it does.
Anyway, so that's week 13. Navy's not playing. They're prepping for Army in a couple of weeks. That's week 13. That's the last week of the regular season, as it was. Right before we start talking to Nick Anderson, I accidentally said that the winner of the conference is probably going to the playoff. No, I meant the New Year Six. You know what I meant. Mm.
I didn't even notice that you said that.
I realized that as soon as I said it, but then Nick was on and I had to be had to shut up.
You didn't want to look bad in front of Nick Anderson, huh?
Well, I just had to shut up.
That's fair.
So a little bit of coaching, I guess. What do you think? How many coaches do you think end up losing their job or moving on in this conference this year? Is my first question to you, because I want to talk to you about a few things I've heard.
I mean, I guess, all right, well, let's go through it. So Tulane, I think Willie Fritz, it's safe to say he's there. Cincinnati, I guess the only way that coaches like that would move on is if there's open positions somewhere they want to go. So
I'll get just, to this with Fritz.
Do you think Fritz would? I don't think he would leave. No way. I don't believe it.
I've heard Fritz to Georgia Tech's a pretty real rumor. Not necessarily for sure, but like on Georgia Tech's and they like him. Not, you know what I mean? But they also like
Don't think he would. If they go.
Mike Houston also interviewed for Tech. but I don't think he's going to.
I don't think he would leave ECU.
I don't think he's taking the tech job. I can say with like 90% certainty that he interviewed for it.
Well, we know Gus isn't going anywhere. I don't know about...
When Lane Kiffin takes Auburn, the funniest thing would be for Ole Miss to then hire Gus.
Oh, my God. No.
That'd be funny.
Gus, don't do it to yourself because you're happy now. Don't do it.
I don't think he would do it, but I think it would be funny.
And then I don't think Holgorsen... I mean, I don't know. I never know what he'll do. So, like, who really knows?
Holgorsen's fine because the big donor at Houston.
Right. And I don't think he's not going to leave that money.
Money people at Houston like him. And he's fine. Fickell, most people are pretty convinced, will only leave Cincinnati for either Notre Dame or Ohio State. And those aren't opening up this year.
Right. So that's a moot point. SMU, obviously, Rhett Lashley's there. Navy, I don't see them.
Some people have said that he needs to beat Army. Some people have said that.
And I think they will beat Army, to be honest with you. And I'll be at that game. We're actually bringing Joey Chestnut to that game. So that's going to be epic in all kinds of ways.
I think that they'll beat Army also.
I think they'll beat Army. But I'll say this. I did reach out to both teams to do some stuff with Joey because, you know, I wanted an equal opportunity, like both do stuff with both service schools. Only one of them deigned to work with us and have Joey do stuff. The other one declined. So thought that was interesting and said that it's not a good fit, unfortunately. But
whatever. Did you see Navy, not to get sidetracked from what I was talking about, did you see Navy drop their space themed uniforms for the Army Navy?
Oh, did I see that? I literally wrote a soliloquy on Twitter about it, describing each of the things about it. It was freaking incredible.
Yeah, they got.
I was told that Army is going to drop their Army Navy game uniforms early next week, so probably Monday, Tuesday after they play this UMass this weekend.
Go, go you.
Yeah, so look out for those Army uniforms. There's no way that Army's uniforms will be better than Navy's, though. Those Navy ones are insane.
It's every year, though. Navy's are always better.
Yeah, I don't know who does the design on that, but there. Anyway, so we talked about East Carolina. I guess Mike Houston. Interviewing around, which is
he's gaining interest from not high.
I mean, I can't blame people for wanting him, but I don't think he'll leave.
I don't think he'll leave this cycle, but it's worth pointing out that he has interest from higher ranking jobs. That's all.
Maybe when Holt Nailers is gone. I mean, maybe, well, I don't know. Maybe they make a pact and they leave together.
Well,
at the end of the year,
I don't necessarily think that Georgia Tech's the right job for him. I don't think he thinks it's the right job for him, but I think that he's acutely aware of, say, a Mac Brown at North Carolina retires, that would be the right job for him.
Okay.
Or if
interesting, you
know, stuff like that. Or if Mike Loxley and Maryland decide, hey, we've hit what we can do, which I don't think Maryland will, but it's an example.
No.
I think he wants to stay in that region that he's always.
Yeah, been. I agree with you.
He's always been kind of a mid-Atlantic regional coach, though.
Memphis, obviously, we've talked about Silverfield may need to be removed if this weekend doesn't go well. So that's TBD. Yeah.
Silverfield, I think, is the seat's pretty warm. And I think a loss to SMU would make it very, very hot at the very least going into next year.
Agreed.
6-6-ish, even 7-5. It's not good enough at Memphis for an aspirational program that really wanted to be moving to the Big 12 next year.
Yeah, exactly. Thought that they should be considered, which,
it's not good enough.
Then we have Tulsa, which we've talked about this
point for Philip Montgomery, too.
It's interesting because he's.
I mean, if Houston wins 52-10, I'd get his ass out.
Yeah, it's really hard for me to imagine Tulsa without him because he's been such like a staple there.
Yeah, he's
been he's been there a while. And I think he's a good coach. I think it's hard. It's sometimes it's just too hard. So we'll see. But yeah, we could see some movement there. Temple, obviously, rolling with the Stan Drayton era. And then South Florida has already made their.
Yeah, South Florida.
Made their bed. So
South Florida wants someone with Florida ties, head coaching experience. Those are the two things they want. You know what name keeps popping up and won't go away for South Florida?
Mm-hmm.
Scott Frost.
I actually heard that and I laughed.
I had a whole rant on Twitter about how I don't think it makes sense for either side. I think if you look at the last three coaches that South Florida had, they went Willie Taggart, who say what you will about him now, which is I think FAU needs to fire him. He was an up-and-coming coach with Florida ties who was doing well. and had that head coaching experience, and they hired him, and it was pretty good at USF. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The next coach they did the retread hire in Charlie Strong, and it did not work out. The program regressed. Then they went with the up-and-coming coach, Florida ties, but absolutely no head coaching experience in Jeff Scott, and it was a disaster.
Yeah.
Am I crazy for thinking you just need to find someone with Florida ties who's up-and-coming and has that coaching experience again? Those are the things. To me, it's Willie Simmons, the Florida A&M head coach, by the way, is who they should hire.
Interesting. Okay.
And you'll hear his name around that job a little bit. But I don't think you need Manny Diaz, Randy Shannon, Scott Frost, every coach that's been fired at a better program in your state. I don't think you need that, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you can.
I don't like talking about coaching stuff because it makes me sad. Because you think about the families and you think about what the wives and the kids go through. And I've talked to too many coaches this year who have just talked about up and moving, and it's just sad.
It sucks. It does suck for the families and everything.
But I don't really, this is not my favorite topic. So,
all right. I figured I'd get it in though because.
Well, I'm proud of you for squeezing that in there.
Gotta get the juice out of the apple.
All right, guys, that is going to do it for this final week of regular season play minus Army-Navy for the podcast. You guys can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Emilnem, E-M-I-L-N-E-M. And you can follow Nick Anderson, who has an incredibly gorgeous Instagram, by the way. He takes great pictures. Kim actually takes pictures for him. Very well put together social media guy. So it's definitely worth a follow. He is neezy.a_. So make sure you follow him. And then Dan, where can we follow you?
At Dan_Morrison96 on Twitter.
Just tried and true. We love it.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I guess we'll see you guys next week with the answer to who will be in the AAC championship game. Absolutely. Maybe we can rustle up another special guest. Who knows?
We'll see what happens.
We're on a roll. Have a great Thanksgiving holiday, whatever you celebrate. Stay safe. We'll see you next time.